Hello, my name is Marie Bilodeau, and you are listening to On the Edge. I'm now very pleased to welcome Jananchi Oliver, author of the Time Rover series. Welcome.
Welcome. Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Hey, my pleasure. So tell us a little bit about the series as a whole.
Well, the Time Rover series consists of three books at present, and I came up with the idea of taking a time traveler, a time rover, from the future, 2057. And her job is to go back and find missing time tourists, because if you have enough money, you can go back and do research in interesting time periods. And so I thought, wouldn't it be interesting to take a lady from 2057 back to 1888 London during the Jack the Ripper murders, especially somebody who hates Victorian London. So I thought, this is fun. We can drop her in the... And she's a very independent, feisty lady, in it, which is definitely at odds with the Victorian norm. And I thought it'd be fun to play with it, and that's where it came from.
Oh, that's wonderful. And the third novel in the series just came out.
Yes, I'm really pleased. Madman's Dance, which is the third book in the series, just debuted, just launched this weekend at World Fantasy, and it's been fun. It's been great fun.
It's been fun. Now, well, without giving too much away of the plot, can you tell us a little bit about Madman's Dance? Like, what can readers, with a spoiler alert?
Yeah, we won't do a spoiler. I'll be kind, because... There are a lot of people who have yet to read this, and I will get in trouble and I'll get emails. But I can reveal that at the end of book two, I left my heroine in very dire straits, as in a genuine cliffhanger. I warned the readers, and people thought when I said cliffhanger I was kidding. I really wasn't. I left Jacinda Lassiter in a Victorian insane asylum without any memory of who she was. And which is an ugly way of leaving a heroine at the end of book two.
It really is.
Yes. I got emails about that too, wondering how soon. Well, along with some strong language, you know, they enjoy the book, but they're going, you really were serious. It was a cliffhanger. I said, yes. And I even included the first snippet of Madman's Dance in the back of the book, but that didn't seem to help. They still were very... I said, she does survive. And they go, I don't care. I want to know what happens to her. So Madman's Dance is Jacinda's reinvention of herself, where she rebuilds her mind and rebuilds, comes to discover who she is, whether she likes who she or who she was, because she's now an entirely new person because of what's happened to her. Because it was an advanced bit of technology that wiped her memories. It was not like traumatic brain trauma or something like that. So she has to rebuild who she is literally from ground up. And then once she has done that, she has to return to 1888 and try to stop this very horrendous plot to burn London to the ground in that time period. It was very reminiscent of the Great Fire of 1666, which destroyed, I think, 3/4 of London at the time. And so she has to go back and stop the bad guys. But first she has to figure out who she is and get out of the insane asylum. I mean, it was a really ugly place. And I kept asking her, is this where you want to stop in book two? She says, yeah, this is where I am. And I'm going, oh, Lord.
Woman, what are you thinking?
I'm going to get letters, and I did.
That's an interesting concept of the idea of the amnesia. Like, it can't be easy to write a character that you know so well, and suddenly part of them is gone, essentially.
It was difficult, and my editor is really, really excellent. Her name's Adrian, and Adrian would go, how does she know this? If I accidentally revealed something at that time, at a point, she goes, how does she know this? You know, have you built up a credibility that Jacinda would remember this at this point? So she was always on my case, which was great, because every now and again you'd forget, and you'd slip something in, they go, okay, wait a minute, 3 seconds ago she didn't know her name, and now suddenly she knows X, you know? And so the editor, God bless her, saved my butt more than once on that, because she would go through and say, okay, you have to backstop why she would know this at this point. And so, yeah, it was difficult, and I've made kind of a vow for the future that I don't really want to write amnesia stories, because they're hard. I mean, time travel was bad enough, but with all the paradoxes and all that, but amnesia, yo!
Yeah, that's not an easy one. Now, you mentioned time travel too, and that's always like the question of how does the time travel work? Like, can they affect the fabric of history, and how is that stopped from happening?
Well, see, that's the problem with time travel. Once you start writing a time travel story, unless you're doing like a time travel romance where you can just kind of suspend disbelief that the heroine from, you know, 2001 is not going to, like, screw up 1643, which she would. I mean, she'd stick out like a sore thumb. I had to set up the rules of time travel, that the fact that time in itself is pretty elastic. If it gets a little off track, it'll pull back. But if you have a series of cascading events, it will pull it completely off the track, and that is what has happened by books 2 and 3. And so... that's, I had to set the rules, which was, you know, if somebody dies, what keeps you from going back and stopping them from dying? Well, we had to embed it in the time stream that once you're in the time stream and you die there, they can't change that. Because if not, it ruins the story. You can always go back and save everybody. It's sort of like Superman not having kryptonite. So, I mean, to make it realistic, there had to be a cause and effect when you're traveling, and it had there also had to be a physical toll for traveling, and that's what Jacinda goes through. It's her mind starting to, as I refer to it, as Swiss cheese, because the company she's worked for is not allowing her enough time to rest and relax after the trips. She's supposed to have mandated 4 days off after any multi-century hop, and they don't give her that. And so her mind is, she's starting to hallucinate, and she's starting to see all sorts of weird things, and she is literally melting down the first two books.
Oh, wow.
It's really, 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 really hard to watch her get that bad, but oddly enough, the brain reboot at the end of book two actually saves her in some regard. So it ended, other than being a horrific thing to happen to her, it actually gives her a chance to have a book three.
Which is good.
Which is good. You know,
your readers would have been really angry.
Really, really angry. Yeah. They're going, what are you writing now? Oh, I'm writing something else. No, you're not. You're finishing the story.
Now, you get really involved into your characters, eh? You really get into their flesh. Did you? How does it make you cry? Does it make you? Do you find it difficult making your characters go through all these tough times?
Well, yeah. My characters tell me what they're doing. It's sort of like I'm the scribe, and I know there are people who go, "Great, the voices in your head are making them, you know, write down what they tell you." But they do. But it is hard. There is a death in book three that I will not reveal, but who it is. But it really tore me apart. Not necessarily for the loss of that individual, but the ramifications it had for someone else who loved that individual. And it was hard. And I also have one particular scene in there where I have one of my main characters I care a great deal about who gets right up to the edge and almost dies. And it's such a horrific. I got my proofreader crying, so I'm going, okay, I got it right. But
yes.
It was hard to put. This is a really, really hard book on my characters, and as if the first two books weren't bad enough. And, yeah, you feel bad about torturing them, so that I would really like by the end of book three there'd be some respite, you know, that they find some peace and you know, relaxation for, you know, where they can step back from the fray for a while. And that's what I was aiming for, which is why there are more books in the series, but this is Jacinda's three-book story arc so that I don't continue to do... So Jacinda's will continue to show up in other stories, but her main story is tied up in three stories. And I think that's kind of cool because some authors go on for, like, 4 million books, and after a while you can't do much more to them. You go, okay, well, yes, you ran them over with a combine in book four, and you did it again in book 12. You know, I mean, you run out of ways to torture your, you know. Well, it's true. I mean, they always find new ways to try to, you know, and you're going, okay, you've been shot in that arm three times, and the leg, you know.
Yeah.
I think there's a natural story arc to every you know, every saga, and you've got to find out what the length is, or in this case, the characters will say, I'm tired of getting mashed. Could we just, like, can I have some time off and prop my feet up and relax?
Take a little break here.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that there's other books and that are coming out in the Time Rover series. Is that something you're working on right now, or can you tell us a bit about what your next writing project will be?
My next writing project, I'm signed with a New York agent this summer, so I'm working on, we're pitching a young adult urban fantasy to some publishers, and we'll see if that, you know, triggers anybody's interest. So right now I'm going to step away from the Time Rover series since I finished Jacinda's arc, take some time off, but I want to continue on and I want to write some more about the shapeshifters, the transitives, and I also want to write, set in 1888, and I also want to tell some of the other Time Rover stories. So, but right now it just seems to be a logical time to step away and do something else and then come back.
Sounds marvelous. Can you tell us a little bit about your writing process? I mean, you mentioned that the characters kind of have their own voices and they kind of tell you what to do. Do you outline at all?
That hysterical laughter for the listeners is because I'm one of, there are a couple different kinds of writers. There are those who outline and plot beautifully everything. They know exactly what's going to happen in every scene. And then there are people that they call pantsers, people who go by to see the pants. I don't really like that term. I call myself a fog walker. I just get into that thick Victorian fog and I keep walking and hoping I don't walk off the end of a pier into the Thames. I have a rough idea with the beginning of the book and the rough idea in the end of the book, and the middle is one big unexplored country. And that gets tricky when you're doing really complex mysteries with multiple subplots and things like that, because if you can't plot those all out in advance, then you're banging your head against the wall at the back end in like book three trying to tie up all these little things that you did in book one and two. I wish I could plot that tightly, but I really can't. Now once I get into the story and I have a rough draft, I'll go through and use an Excel spreadsheet and lay out, because since this is, the series is set in 1888 over actual historical events, I actually had to lay out a time grid so I knew that Alistair and Jacinda and Keats, the three main characters, were doing certain things on certain days, and what was going on in the environment in London and around them. And so it was kind of tricky that way.
Yeah, I can imagine. Did you do a lot of research into 1888 London?
Yeah. I had originally wanted to write a historical mystery series, and I still will write that someday, and I got fascinated by Victorian London. And then I got somewhat fascinated by Jack the Ripper, more that I'm not so keen to find out who Jack is, but I was really fascinated at how he affected society, and especially in the East End of London where the murders were occurring. And so the books are set from the end of September during the Ripper's reign all the way through November 9th when he kills his supposed last victim in Dorset Street. So there was a ton of research. I probably have cumulative at least a year and a half worth of research. I've got over 100 Victorian books and maps, and I've been to England 2 or 3 times.
Wow.
7, 8 times. But I've been to England before, but once I was writing the series, I had to go back and, you know, dig out things that I couldn't find in the internet or in books.
Yeah. Oh, wonderful. Now, we have a lot of writers here going around to con, and as a published author, what would you give them as that one a piece of advice that you would have liked to have before you were a published author?
Actually, I had really excellent advice before I became a published author. I would say the best thing for them to do is get involved in writing organizations. Now, some of them are better than others, but get in with other authors, whether they be published or not, because you get that body of knowledge. It's sort of like sitting around the campfire and having the village elders tell you that you really want to go after the short, stubby, you know, critters with teeth rather than the really big ones that are going to eat you. There's an accumulated body of knowledge, and then you have to just kind of winnow through and decide what works for you and what doesn't. But it's good to get in with other writers, because it's a very lonely craft. For the most time, you've got your button chair and you're on your own, either your headphones plugged in or whatever. And so you need to go out and socialize with other folks and find out that the trials and tribulations, or even the triumphs that you're getting, that are coming to you, are shared. So it's kind of sharing the experience, sharing the misery, and then also sharing the joy. Because, you know, if somebody didn't make that big book contract, you get together and you prop them up. And then when they did, you celebrate and you pop the champagne, even if it's cyber champagne. You know, so, yeah, get in with other writers, and because you'll learn. And also, if you find some that are really good at critiquing your work, then, because not all critiquers are even. Some of them are good and some of them are bad. But if you can find folks that will honestly critique your work, that's what you need, because you're too close to your baby. It's sort of like, you know, your baby can be the most ugliest thing on the planet and you're going to think it's cute. And you need somebody with, you know, a great deal of honesty to say, you know, have you thought about the fact that this scene just doesn't work? You know.
Yeah. Tough love.
Yeah, tough love, exactly. Tough love.
Wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being here with us today.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate it. This has been fun.
Yeah, and we look forward, really looking forward to seeing what else you come up with in the future.
Well, you never know with my mind.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.